translation by Srila Prabhupada. He thus becomes liberated from conditional life and becomes self-situated in transcendental devotional service to the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, the omniscient supersoul within everyone. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When one engages in the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, one becomes aware that his constitutional position as an individual soul is to be eternally a servitor of the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva. Self-realization does not mean that because the Supreme Soul and the individual soul are both souls, they are equal in every respect. The individual soul is prone to be conditioned, and the Supreme Soul is never conditioned. When the conditioned soul realizes that he is subordinate to the Supreme Soul, his position is called Labh Atma, self-realization, or Mukta Bandha, freedom from material contamination. Material contamination continues as long as one thinks that he is good, as the Supreme Lord or is equal with him. This condition is the last snare of Maya. Maya always influences the conditioned soul. Even after much meditation and speculation, if one continues to think himself one with the Supreme Lord, it is to be understood that he is still in the last snare of the spell of Maya. The word parena is very significant. Para means transcendental, untinged by material contamination. Full consciousness that one is an eternal servant of the Lord is called parabhakti. If one has any identification with material things and executes devotional service for attainment of some material gain, that is vida bhakti, contaminated bhakti. One can actually become liberated by execution of parabhakti. Another word mentioned there is sarvajnana. The supersoul situated within the heart is all cognizant. He knows. I may forget my past activities due to the change of body, but because the Supreme Lord, as Paramatma, is sitting within me, he knows everything. Therefore, the results of my past karma or past activities is awarded to me. I may forget, but he awards me suffering or enjoyment for the misdeeds or good deeds of my past life. One should not think that he is freed from reaction because he has forgotten the actions of his past life. Reactions will take place, and what kind of reactions there will be is judged by the supersoul, the witness. Vasudeva Bhagavati Sarvagyam Pratyagatmani Parina Bhakti Bhavina Labhatma Mukta Bandhana. He thus became liberated from conditional life and became self-situated in transcendental devotional service to the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, the omniscient supersoul within everyone. Om Agyanata Murandasya Jnanam Jnana Salakaya Chakshurun Milatamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Munam Vistam Shapitam Minam Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gitamayam Datati Svam Patantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Girada Shivasri Gaura Bhakta Vrindam. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. He thus became liberated from conditional life and became self-situated in transcendental devotional service to the personality of Godhead Vasudeva, the omniscient supersoul within everyone. So this condition of self-situated is very important. This is the analytical study, Sankhya. Sankhya means to understand things by analysis, the word Sankhya, in Sanskrit, I don't know the exact meaning, but it basically means to count, to analyze, to departmentalize in many ways, to put the material energy into different categories. Because the analysis of the self, one should understand what is the self. So the self is situated within the body. So the self is sometimes termed as the observer, one who is observing, just like we are situated in the body and we are observing. That thing which we are observing is called phenomena or material energy. We are observing material energy through the senses. The senses are the instruments by which we function. This material body is made up of senses. And those senses are described very nicely, actually, in this particular conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. As impelled by the destiny of the jiva, the false ego, which is of three kinds, evolved from the mahatapa, in which the element of raja predominates. From the ego, in turn, involve many groups of five principles. So there are different groups of five. Just like you have five senses for acquiring knowledge, isn't it? So the instruments of the body are made up of different types of senses. Now, what is the nature of those senses? It's for acquiring knowledge, experience. Because the living entity is sentient, the living entity is conscious. Therefore, he wants conscious experience. He wants to have conscious experience. So he can only have conscious experience through certain conditions. This has to be understood. Just like if you're unconscious, you can't experience anything. If you're unconscious, the instruments are also there. The nose is there. You're not smelling. Just like when they want to test someone is it conscious, they put a, what they call to see if they can wake up by smell or by shouting. They try to wake them up by shouting, isn't it? Wake up. So they see different things. They shake them by touch. So these knowledge acquiring senses are five. So the primordial matter or the material nature is called prakriti. And the nature of the material nature is that it has three different gradations. There's higher grade, middle grade, lower grade. So higher grade of what? Higher grade of what? That we should study. What is the higher grade? Higher grade of what? Who can answer? What is it, a higher grade? When we say higher grade, middle grade, lower grade, higher grade of what? Huh? Exactly, it is a higher grade of conscious experience. Material life means a life of experience. But material life is actually a life of inexperience. You see? Try and understand this point. Our whole existence is made up of experience. But it is inexperience. Just like you say, a child is inexperienced. We say like that. The child is inexperienced because it doesn't have sufficient experience of what? What doesn't it have sufficient experience of? It doesn't have sufficient experience of nature. So therefore, we consider the child to be inexperienced. We are also inexperienced, so life means to become experienced. We want to become experienced. So we are trying to gain different types of experience. Now what is different types of experience is different types of knowledge. Therefore Krishna says, Bahunam jamanam mante, jnanavam mam prapajyante, vasudeva sanamriti samahapma sudalava. Krishna says, after many, many lives of these experiences, or inexperience, because there's no perfect experience within the material world, there is imperfect experience. Why? Because our senses are imperfect. So therefore, the instruments, the five instruments of acquiring knowledge, are imperfect. We have imperfect seeing, imperfect hearing, imperfect touch, imperfect smell, imperfect taste. All of these things are imperfect. Therefore, our experience of the material phenomena is very inadequate. Because we're inadequate, the experience is inadequate. It doesn't mean material nature is inadequate. It means that our experience of material nature is inadequate. So therefore, these senses are considered to be a cause of conditioning. Material nature is a certain type of condition. Mamaya vamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Mamasa stani indriyani. Indriyani, Krishna is saying that all of these jivas, every single living entity on this planet, is part and parcel of me. He is in me and he is mine. Very simple. We are all one and different from Krishna. We have exactly the same quality as Krishna, which is called Chaitanya. Chaitanya means consciousness. We are Jiva Swarupa Nitya Krishna Das. So our Swarupa, our form, is Nitya Krishna Das. Now we are Maya Das. Now we are Maya Das. We are serving the material energy phenomena. Phenomena is the manifestation of Krishna's separated energy. Therefore what? There's five groups. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. They are called Mahabhuta. They are the main material ingredients. So the senses are made up of those combinations and interreactions and permutations of these five elements. Just like water, our tongue. We need water to taste. That's why we have saliva on the tongue. So taste, water, we need to enjoy foodstuffs. What is foodstuff? Earth, isn't it? What is foodstuff? It's earth, isn't it? Is it something else? Earth and water. It's a combination, earth, water. And mix it with fire, we get cooked sabji, isn't it? You mix it up with some fire, and then when we digest it, we need air. Burp. Isn't it? We need air. So earth, water, fire, air, all of these things are endlessly mutated in the material world in very, very beautiful arrangements. Just like our body is made up of earth and water. Just like when I was a kid, we used to go to these funerals, which were always extremely boring. But at the end of it, they would, because I was in a choir, I had to sing in the choir, then you had to go along to the coffin. So they say, dust thou art, dust thou be it. You see, it was like the last curse on the poor person. As they say, the coroner, or the undertaker is the last person who lets you down. So, in the material world, we are dust, dust thou art, dust thou be it. The body is a combination of dust and earth. So these groups, earth, water, fire, and ether. The second group of five is called tanmatra. Now, tanmatra refers to the subtle elements. These are also there. They are described as the what we call the sense objects. Now, the sense objects in the case of sound. Sound is very subtle. No one's actually seen sound. Has anyone seen a sound? You can't see sound. Can you? Can you see sound? No, you can't see sound. You can see the effect. So when we talk about sound, touch, form, taste, smell, these are more subtler. But they are the objects. They are the things which keep us, if you like, struggling in the material world. We are struggling after these objects. So the living entity is identified as the observer. The instruments which he observes are called the senses, and that which is the object. Now this is very important. The object of his observation is Maya. You see? What is the object? The object means Maya. So this Maya, Krishna says, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Chacharacharam Etunanena Kuntaya Jagavi Parivartate. So Krishna says, this Maya is working under my arrangement, not someone else's arrangement. Krishna says it is working under my arrangement. So therefore, you are bewildered by Krishna. Try and understand this point. You are bewildered by Krishna. Krishna is bewildering you. So you have to question, Why is Krishna bewildering me? I don't want to be bewildered. Oh, but yes, you do want to be bewildered. No, I don't. I want to be happy. Please let me be happy. I want to be happy. Everyone's talking like that. I just want to be happy. I don't want anything else. Let me be happy. But the point is, we don't know how to be happy. That is the problem. Therefore, that is called ajnana. Ajnana means we, because of our foolishness, ahankara vimudatma, because we are identifying with these ahankara. Ahankara means the false identification. Simply a matter of false identification, which would then give us the understanding that we need a proper identification. We need to have a proper identification. We are identifying externally. But here, it has been said that we have to identify internally. That's the difference between material life and spiritual life. Material life is conducted in the external phenomena of the material world. Spiritual life is conducted within the internal. Internal. We have to go internal. Why? Because Krishna says, I am situated in the heart. Krishna is not situated in the shops, in the discotheques, the clubs, or the marketplace, or running after this and running after that. This is not chasing after Krishna. Chasing after Krishna means Krishna is telling us that I am situated in the heart. And I am directing the wanderings from within the heart. So direction is coming from within. Now, if we want to change our direction, we have to get direction from within. Because at the moment, we are being directed in the material world by the false ego. The mind is the conductor of material sense gratification. We have allowed the mind to take control. We have set back, if you like. We have set back and said to the mind, okay, go ahead. You take control. You take me around this material world and show me a good time. That's what I want. So therefore, the living entity has, if you like, given over control of his destiny to the mind. So because he's given over control of his destiny to the mind, the mind is the conductor. The mind is the conductor of the material world, and the senses are the instruments by which the mind conducts its affairs. So therefore, when the mind wants to have nice sex life, the senses are ready. Let's go. When the mind wants to eat very nicely, the tongue becomes agitated. When the mind wants to hear nice rock and roll music, the senses are there. Let's buy a ticket, let's go and watch the show, let's put a tape on, let's put music on. When the mind wants to enjoy very nicely, then the senses are there as servants to the mind. Therefore we call it godas. Godasha means one who executes very nice service to the mind. So Krishna is explaining to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that the mind can be the greatest enemy or it can be the greatest friend. Mind which is not in control is your greatest enemy, because the mind drags you. It constantly drags you for what you think is your own well-being, for what you think is your own pleasure, your own sense gratification. But it has nothing to do with actual pleasure. It is simply the illusion of the mind that one thinks that somehow by conducting my affairs in the external world, I will find some permanent situation, I will find some happy situation, I will find some, enjoyable situation. But the thing is that one cannot be happy in the material world simply because Krishna is not there. Now, one may say, yes, Krishna is not there, but there are many other wonderful things that are there, which I can enjoy. So that's true. In the material world, the objects of sense gratification are very, very powerful. And according to the qualification of the independent living entity, he gets various types of rewards and suffering. Therefore, Krishna says, Matra Spashita Kuntaya, Shitoshna Sukha Dukkata. Sometimes there is very nice pleasurable arrangement, and sometimes there is very horrible arrangement, very ugly arrangement. So these are called sukha dukkha. So now here, it is said that when one becomes liberated from conditional life, as it says with Kardama Muni, he thus became liberated from conditional life and became self-situated. This self-situation is very important, because without self-situation, there's no meaning to spiritual life. Spiritual life is not an external affair. The external affair of spiritual life is simply, just like Prabhupada says, the child has the capacity to walk. So in order to learn to walk, there may be some external affair. You may buy one of these things in mother care. What they have, it's a support. So there's some support there. So the child gradually, by association with that support, gets some help. But it doesn't need any support. Just like a bird when it learns to fly. There's no school. There's no educational system in the bird world where they take their children along to learn to fly. Isn't it? They don't need to, even though flying is their main activity throughout their life, because naturally they have that internal ability to fly. Naturally we have an internal ability to walk. Otherwise no amount of practice could help us. You see? Unless it was internal, the external factor is always secondary. Similarly, our natural condition is to love Krishna. There is nothing more natural to the soul than to love Krishna. So this is a natural life. Krishna consciousness is completely 100% natural. What is unnatural is to ignore Krishna, to forget Krishna, to exist without Krishna. That is completely unnatural. That's why when one advances in devotional service, one cannot stand the idea of forgetting Krishna. A devotee cannot tolerate that idea. Prahlad Maharaj, when he was being protected by Lord Narsingadev, and Lord Narsingadev was feeling very, very happy with Prahlad Maharaj because he's of the love that Prahlad had for Lord Narsingadev. All the other demigods were frightened like anything, that here comes the Lord in a very horrible form, ghastly form, but Prahlad was simply in ecstasy that Krishna has come. So Lord Narsingadev gave him a benediction. Whatever you want, Prahlad, you can take from me. So Prahlad said, I have no desire for anything, but one thing I am very, very fearful for, and that is if I should forget you. You see, so Prabhupada explains that this forgetting Krishna is the greatest anxiety of the devotee. Now you can say devotees shouldn't have anxiety, but that anxiety they have, that if I might forget Krishna, therefore it's a great anxiety to the devotee. Why? Because if I should forget Krishna, then the devotee's heart would be broken. Just like Lord Chaitanya says, that one moment now has become like 12 years or more. And tears are flowing from my eyes like torrents of rain. You see? I am feeling all vacant in this world in your absence. So this is very obviously very advanced state of Krishna consciousness. But the whole idea of Krishna consciousness is one must come to the platform where one cannot tolerate anything which is separate from Krishna. On that plane, there are no rules and regulations. All of these rules and regulations which we follow, get up early, come to Mangalari, chant one's rounds, read the books, all of these things. They are all things which simply are there to bring about a state of remembrance of Krishna. Remembrance of Krishna. They're not there, or neither are they there, to be separately used than purely for Krishna consciousness. So the idea is that here Kardamba Muni became situated in transcendental devotional service to the personality of Godhead Vasudev, the omniscient super soul within everyone. So now if Krishna is within everyone, then surely he's in the heart of the devotee, isn't it? The one place you would expect to find Krishna must be in the heart of the devotee. Right? So if he's not in our heart, that means we're not devotees. Isn't it? Is it true or not? Krishna is in the heart of the devotee. So if Krishna is not in our heart, that means there's a problem. The problem is we're not devoted. So Krishna says, Yeyam mam prapadyante. As they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. So therefore, this reciprocation is very, very important. What Krishna is looking from within the heart is simply he is looking for the devotee's affection. Affection of the devotee. This is the meaning of love. Love means affection. So therefore, in the position of Vaidhi Bhakti, Krishna manifests himself externally. Because the devotee is in neophyte condition, he can't see Krishna in his heart, so Krishna manifests himself externally. What is the external manifestation of Krishna? That external manifestation of Krishna is there in the form of the Archivigraha. Archivigraha means the deity, just like what you are seeing here is exactly the same as in your heart. It's exactly what you should be seeing in your heart. Krishna in Vrindavan, and one should be absorbed in that loving relationship with Krishna. But because we're not seeing that in the heart, therefore it is recommended that one should constantly try to see the form of Krishna in the temple. And Krishna has manifested himself in the form of spiritual master, in the form of the Bhagavatam. There's three things which are very important. Bhakta. Bhakta means devotee. Bhakti. Bhakti means the process of devotion. And Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the object of devotion. So in the material world, the individual is not bhakta. Therefore, there's no bhakti. Right? There's no bhakti because the person is not a bhakta. And therefore, there's no Bhagavan. So the observer is in Maya. The instruments by which he's observing are causing him more Maya. And the objects that he's observing are causing him even more Maya. For the devotee is a bhakta. Therefore, everything he does is called bhakti. And therefore, the object is fully manifested, is called Bhagavan. So this is called Kaivalya. Kaivalya means when there is absolute oneness with Krishna. In the material concept, in the false concept of the Maya bodies, they think that Kaivalya means situated in Brahman, Brahma Jyoti, oneness, this oneness with energy. This is not the real meaning of Kaivalya. Kaivalya means when there is one in interest with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The interest of the devotee is to give pleasure to Krishna. The interest of the materialist is to give pleasure to himself. That is the difference between conditional life, because as soon as you want to give pleasure to yourself, then that can only happen under artificial conditions. You see? It can only happen under artificial conditions because in the spiritual world there is no question of the living entity wanting to give pleasure to himself. Just like it's exactly the example. If your hand suddenly decides that it wants to eat the feast separately. Suppose your hand just went independent all of a sudden. Right in the middle of the feast, you had just got served this big maha plate. And the hand thought to himself, I'm not going to keep giving it to that guy. That tongue is always getting all that pleasure, the belly gets fat, but what do I get? So what I'm going to do, I'm going to move it away. And I'm going to eat it myself. So suddenly your hand tries to eat the globjaman or the samosa. Isn't it? It would be a very stupid and messy affair. And not only that, it wouldn't give any actual pleasure to the hand whatsoever. But it may give him the satisfaction that at least he didn't have to give it to the belly. And at least I didn't have to give it to the tongue. At least I can declare my independence from these other guys. Right? So the hand has decided, I am independent. I'm the one who picks it up. And if they want to pick up their own food, let them pick it up. It's not my business. So the hand no longer wants to be a servant of the whole. So therefore, similarly, the living entity, as soon as he thinks that there is something separate from Krishna, there's some pleasure, there's some interest, there's something to be gained by being separate from Krishna, then he's situated in Maya consciousness. Then he's put into artificial condition. Artificial condition means the material world. There's nothing more artificial in the material world than trying to enjoy. Nothing more artificial, nothing more stupid looking, nothing more ridiculous looking, nothing more pathetic looking than someone trying to enjoy in the material world. Why? Because every single part of it is a struggle. And the stupid fool doesn't understand it. They think that the less struggle there is, the more they've actually achieved. But we see that they're trying to make less struggle, but struggle is increasing more and more. Just like now, there are hundreds and thousands of cars tearing down the motorway with the hope that today I'm going to sort out my problems. I need a certain amount of money. My wife's there, my kid's there, my family. I've got to make some arrangement for them. We've got to be happy. In the future, we're going to buy this, we're going to buy that. All of these illusions are drifting. But the actual point is that the more you artificially try to enjoy in the material world, simply the only thing that increases is the struggle. Just like the more determined the hand becomes to enjoy. Suppose the hand gets really complicated and thinks, okay, I can't eat the food, but I'll make a machine. I'll create a machine that'll actually munch up all the food, and then somehow or other that machine will be able to feed the food through the little pores in my skin, and I'll be able to get that little bit of nectar when it comes in, just so that stomach doesn't get it instead of me. So the point is that the hand was not created to enjoy, therefore its endeavor is completely useless from beginning to end. The soul was not created to be a dominator, a controller, an exploiter. The soul was never created to be a controller. Because if the soul was created to be a controller, he'd be in control. Isn't it? Doesn't it make logical sense? Just like the hand. If the hand was created to digest food, it'd be able to digest food. If the human being was created to be a controller, he would be able to control. But he can't even control the blinking of his own eyes. He can't even control the functions of his own physical body. He can't even stop his hair falling out, his teeth falling out, his skin falling off. All of the things that are happening with his body are simply completely confirmation that he is totally out of control. And the more out of control you are with your body, the more embarrassed you are, isn't it? You're embarrassed. Just like when you start dribbling, someone falls asleep and they're dribbling, you know? And they wake up and there's all this dribble and they're embarrassed. Why? Because the body is such a disgusting thing that it's an embarrassment. But instead of people getting embarrassed, they try to disregard and pretend. This is called pretentiousness. They try to pretend. There's nothing wrong. I mean, a few little things go wrong now and again. But actually, when it comes down to it, I'm in control. I'm the one who decides. I'm the one who decides when I spend my money. I'm the one who decides when the electrical light goes on, when the hot water comes on. I'm the one who decides when I go to the movies or not, if I go to the restaurant or not. So in this way, we create this artificial, pretentious consciousness that we are actually somehow or other controlling. When at every single moment, at every instance of our life, we are totally dominated by factors which we have nothing to do with, which we had nothing to do with creating. Nobody that comes to this planet had anything to do with anything that's on it when they arrived. Did they? So that means that you've come into an arrangement that there's not one single atomic fraction that you had anything to do with. And when you leave that arrangement, there's not one single thing that you've contributed to that arrangement. Not one single thing you've contributed. When you come to this world, you come in with no contribution to give. And when you leave, you have left without giving any contribution. Because there is nothing new under the sun. Whatever we are doing in the material world is simply chewing the chew. We are doing exactly what the last person did, the person before them, the person before that, the person before that. We are doing exactly the same thing that billions upon billions upon billions of living entities have done when they came into the material world. We are simply conducting the interaction between the senses and the sense object, and we are situated on this machine, Prakriti Kriyamanani. The machine of material nature is grinding us along, grinding us down, completely smashing us at every moment, completely defeating us at every single instance. And instead of being humble and coming to the understanding that actually I am totally controlled, conditioned, I am totally under the mechanism of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so therefore these are called mudha. Namam daskuchi na mudha prapadyante naradama maya apritya jhanam asuram bhavam asritya. So Krishna says, these idiots, these fools and rascals, these mudhas, whatever you want to call them, the same principle is there. Twits, fools, idiots. What is the average person? He's an idiot. The average person is a complete, utter idiot. He's completely 100% mad. They even did a survey in America by a top psychiatrist, and they declared that at least 40% of the American public are clinically mad. Now that was done by Americans. What the speaker was done by anyone else. So a person is mad. Why are we mad? Because we don't even know who the heck we are. We don't even know who we are. We haven't got a clue. Isn't it? So therefore, someone who doesn't even know who they are is mad. Not only do we not know who we are, we don't even know why we're here. Not only do we not know why we're here, we don't even know where we're going. Not only do we not know where we're going, we don't even know how to get there. We don't even know where we're going, but on top of that, we don't even know how to get there, even if we did know how we're going. And in the struggle to get there, to that place where we don't even know where we're going, in that great struggle which takes up all of our life, in the end of it all, we just drop down dead anyway. And someone says, get rid of that, will you? It's blocking the hallway. And that's life. So therefore, one must understand that this external material world is not the place where the living entity belongs. The living entity belongs internally. Internally means Krishna is there within the heart. He's within the heart of all living entities. And therefore, if one wants to find Krishna, then simply one has to go within his heart. In other words, Krishna consciousness is a change of heart. And if we don't make that change of heart, if we simply engage ourselves in all the external so-called arrangements, but there's no internal arrangement, then that is simply materialism. Therefore, it says in the Bhagavatam, Kaitava. Kaitava means cheating religion. That religion which is cheating, because why? Savai pamsam paro dharmo yato bhakti yat hoksaje. It says that supreme occupational duty, dharma, is by which man can engage himself in transcendental devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such devotional service must be uninterrupted and unmotivated in order to give complete satisfaction to the self. So therefore, one must have no material desire or any kind of material impediment, interruption in one's devotional service. Such devotional service will give complete satisfaction to the self. And that is signified by the fact that one will no longer require any kind of material arrangement to make oneself happy. That is the perfection. Just like Kardama Muni was a great Muni, a great mystic. He could create all sorts of wonderful material arrangements. He could travel around the universe in a big spaceship, measuring huge distance. Beautiful. He could go anywhere in the material world to satisfy his senses. But what did he decide to do? He decided to give up everything. He gave up everything in order that he could simply concentrate within the heart. Krishna within the heart. So therefore, this process of Krishna consciousness is very practical because it is simply a matter of going within our heart. And how do we go within our heart? We can go in the heart when we call that person who's in the heart to come out of the heart. Come out means to manifest himself. And when he manifests himself to us, then we can actually understand Krishna consciousness. Therefore, this process of chaitanya dhapanam marjanam, this cleansing of the heart, must be very seriously done, because Krishna is in the heart, but he's covered over. Not covered, but we've covered him by so many layers of contamination. So therefore, this chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is very, very important. It should not be external, gross affair, but it is internal affair. And Prabhupada says, one should chant as if one is crying for Krishna. Just like a child crying for its mother, one has to be seriously engaged in crying for Krishna, crying out for Krishna. Because when one is serious about connecting with Krishna, then Krishna says, then immediately I will reveal myself. The Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam. For those who are constantly devoted to me, worship me with all of their heart, I give them the connection. I give them the understanding. I give them the intelligence. I give them the knowledge. I give them the power. I give them the ability by which they can come to me. And if we want to instead